And Health Talk is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui and Heaven on Earth Starts.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
And I also say that the views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not represent those of KKCR, its board, its member, its underwriters. Hello, Dr. Donna Kaplan. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cousin Rich.
And how are you this March day?
I'm doing so well, thank
Feels
you.
Like
how about you?
Pretty good. Feels like spring is right around the corner.
It does.
There are things starting to bud out early this year, like the plumerias and the jade vines and
nice.
Monkey paw trees. So I think we're going to have an early spring.
Yeah, well, we have a really, really wonderful show today with two fantastic guests. One is a guest that's been on this show several times. It's Barbara Lowe Fisher of the National Vaccine Information Center. And she should be calling in any moment now. And we also have Jeffrey Jackson here in the studio. And he is an independent journalist and researcher covering health and medicine. So, Jeffrey, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Donna. I'm looking forward to talking to you and Barbara. When I heard Barbara was on the show and it was your show, I dropped everything on a very busy day to be here. So yeah. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
That's great.
And we have Barbara on the line, so let me bring her on. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Good afternoon.
Barbara.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Aloha, Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we also have Jeffrey Jackson here, and we just introduced him.
Hi, Barbara.
And hello.
And you're the founder and president of National Vaccine Information Center. And today we're going to be talking about vaccinations, mostly in terms of policy and ethics and informed consent. And we'll talk about two vaccinations in particular. And the reason why this is so timely right now, I think most people aren't aware that there were seven different bills pertaining to vaccinations that were brought into the legislature, and some of them are not still active, and some of them are, and it's very important that we talk about this. There's even one of the bills that's going to be acted on tomorrow in the Senate, and so Jeffrey is actually here, who's been following what's going on here in Hawaii in terms of vaccinations. So he's going to talk about the specifics. But first, Barbara, why don't you tell us what you've been doing for, about 30 years now in the topics of vaccinations and safety and informed consent, right?
Well, I joined with other parents of DPT vaccine-injured children in the spring of 1982, and co-founded the nonprofit charity known today as the National Vaccine Information Center. My son had had a severe reaction within hours of his fourth DPT vaccination at age 2.5, and he was left with minimal brain injury, multiple learning disabilities, and attention deficit disorder, and had to be in a self-contained classroom for the learning disabled throughout his public school education. But he was really one of the more fortunate ones. That whole cell DPT vaccine that was being used back then has caused quite a few injuries, far more catastrophic than my son's. So I count myself lucky that he was not injured more severely. But, you know, in doing the research for the book DPT, A Shot in the Dark, which I co-authored with Dr. Harris Coulter in 1985, I realized along the way that it wasn't just DPT vaccine that had a risk profile that had not been communicated to parents in America. But there were issues with other vaccines as well. And we have to remember back then, in the early 1980s, the federal recommendation was 23 doses of 7 vaccines for children between the age of 2 months and 6 years old. That has grown. We have 3 times as many vaccinations recommended for babies being born today than back when my children were being vaccinated in the 80s and early 90s. Today, that list is 49 doses of 14 vaccines between the day of birth and age 6. And if you go through age up to age 18, it's a total of 69 doses of 16 vaccines. That's a very different experience that children are having today than children of 30, 35, 40 years ago. And as I have pointed out repeatedly over the last 3 decades, as I've watched the numbers of children who are chronically ill and disabled grow, it has become very clear that as we've added more vaccines to this schedule, we have seen an increase in chronic disease and disability. 1 child in 6 today is now learning disabled. 1 in 9 has asthma. We have 1 in 10 with ADHD. 1 in 45 with autism. 1 in 400 with diabetes. We have a public health emergency here in terms of how many children are not getting acute diseases. They're not getting acute infectious diseases. Some of these childhood diseases that they used to have, but they are suffering with chronic disease, and I'm not saying it's all due to vaccines. We have a lot of other issues. We have compromised food sources. We have GMO foods. We have processed foods that we didn't have, 40, 50 years ago. We have certainly pollution, pesticide use on a lot of these agricultural products. We have a number of other issues that could be contributing to this chronic disease and this chronic disease epidemic. But I think that you cannot leave the increase in the numbers of vaccines off the table when you're talking about this poor public health report card among children.
Yes, and that's so many vaccinations for a newborn or a two-month-year-old. A two-month-year-old isn't even having anything other than breast milk normally. So it's a lot to be injecting right into the blood layer of the body. And it's not just the specific viruses, right? There are other additives in the vaccinations, and there are several different vaccinations that are being administered at one time.
Yes, back when my children were being vaccinated, the most that was given on one day was 4 vaccines. That was diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, and the DPT vaccine, and then the oral polio vaccine. At another point, they got a measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, but that was given separately by on its own. Today, children can get 8 to 10 vaccines on one day. That is a completely different exposure than children had decades ago. So I think, unfortunately, when you look at the research that's been done to, for example, prove that the current childhood vaccine schedule that the CDC recommends is safe, we have the Institute of Medicine weighing in 2013, taking a look at that, the evidence that the federal schedule is safe, finding that there just isn't enough, there haven't been enough studies done to prove that it's safe. And so, it's a real concern for parents today who are trying to make decisions for their children. When they really go in and look at the research that's been done, there are a lot of gaps in vaccine safety science.
I'm not even sure if there's been any research, any study done on injecting so many vaccinations in children at one time.
Have there been some epidemiological studies done where they say that they've shown that it's not a problem, but they're very few and far between. But what really needs to be done is the hard science, the basic science research, where
right.
you go in and you look at changes in immune function. You get down to this, looking at the cells and molecules, what happens when you give all these vaccines at one time to a child versus when you don't? How does the immune system mature? How are they, how do they do with the challenge from viruses and bacteria? Do they become infected? Do they have complications? That kind of basic science research simply has not been done. And of course, the health authorities don't really want to do it. They would rather do the studies where you compare groups of children against each other. But you know, when you do that, depending upon the design of the study, you can come out with the conclusion that you want. But when I always say the cells and molecules do not lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's the basic science research needs to be done because we have the technological tools now to do it.
Yes, and not only are we talking about the actual viruses and the vaccines, but you have additives. Do you want to talk about those, some of those?
Well, we do. Of course, there's two kinds of vaccines. There's a live virus vaccine, the things like MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella is a live virus vaccine, attenuated virus. We also have the inactivated bacterial vaccines and inactivated viral vaccines. They're injected. It's for example, on polio vaccine, you had two kinds. You had the oral polio vaccine that was given in the drops. They still do that in other underdeveloped countries. In this country, we've switched to an injected vaccine that doesn't give you vaccine strain polio infection. So there's a lot of issues with vaccines. Depending upon whether they're a live virus vaccine or an inactivated vaccine, mm-hmm. The inactivated vaccines have to have a preservative in them, like thimerosal, which is a mercury derivative. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of publicity about thimerosal-containing vaccines and whether or not they're neurotoxic. The government says they're not. Other research shows that thimerosal is neurotoxic. If you're going to get your child vaccinated with an inactivated vaccine, ask for a single dose vial. For example, influenza vaccine comes in multi-dose vials and it comes in single vials. If you want thimerosal-free vial, you need to ask for it.
Right.
Otherwise, your child is likely to get a multi-dose vial that does have thimerosal, mercury in it. There are aluminum adjuvants that make the vaccine hyperstimulate the immune system. Aluminum is also known to be neurotoxic.
Yes.
There's been a lot of controversy about that ingredient in vaccines. But vaccines have a lot of different ingredients depending upon the type of vaccine.
Right.
Antibiotics are in vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
MSG, polysorbate 80.
Right, and
all
polysorbate
of these things
80.
On their own have biological effects. Now, the government says it's in such tiny, minute quantities that it doesn't have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's other research that shows that even tiny, minute quantities of these, formaldehyde, for example, residual formaldehyde is in vaccines. You know, that's a toxic substance. So, you know, again, you've got competing research. But I think the most important thing is that any time you take your child into a doctor and the doctor says your child has to get these vaccines, make sure that you look at the product manufacturer insert, which you can get on MVIC.org. Look at the information that the FDA requires the manufacturer to put on that product insert. You need to do your research before you say yes to a vaccine. Because if you do not believe that your child is a candidate for vaccination, one or more vaccines, you need to exercise your parental rights. And that's why what we're talking about today, preserving the legal right to be able to make a vaccine choice, is so incredibly important for all of us in this country, including those of you who reside in Hawaii.
Yes. Yes. And what's been happening nationwide on this issue?
Well, in the what happened last year when they announced that there was a measles outbreak in Disneyland was that there was a tremendous amount of media attention and a lot of pressure placed on the states to remove non-medical vaccine exemptions. Now, the National Vaccine Information Center has something called the MVIC Advocacy Portal. It's a free networking communication system, software system. You can become a user of the portal, and you can be informed about legislation that is passing traveling through your state that could limit your right to make a vaccine choice. People who were on that portal last year were able to get the information we put out, and they mounted opposition in a number of the states where the lobbyists from the pharmaceutical companies and from the medical trade associations like the American Academy of Pediatrics and the government public health officials came in to try to take away these exemptions, like the religious and the conscientious belief exemption or philosophical belief exemption. We mostly were able to hold the line in all the states except for Vermont lost their philosophical exemption, but they retained a religious exemption. And in California, that state had both the religious and the conscience exemption wrapped into one exemption called the personal belief exemption. It was the only state that had both of those wrapped into one. And in that state, they lost. And so in California, like in Mississippi and West Virginia, you cannot send your child to daycare or school, including elementary or high school, if you don't have a medical exemption written by a doctor. You cannot have religious belief exemption. You cannot have a personal or philosophical belief exemption. If you homeschool your children, then you cannot get them all the federally recommended or all the state mandated vaccine. I think there are 10 vaccines they mandate there, mm-hmm. multiple doses of 10 vaccines. Mm-hmm. So there, California becomes one of the strictest states, along with West Virginia and Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Now this year, we have seen, again, the lobbyists go in and try and take away the exemptions. We've been able to, and I'm sure you'll talk about this, in Hawaii, so far, all that legislation that was forwarded, you know, taking away the religious exemption, trying to mandate the federal schedule for, actually it was for children and adults.
So they were
within 90 days of it passing at the federal level that it would be put in place in Hawaii. You know, those are two of the worst bills.
Yes.
But you held the line. We held the line in Virginia. They tried to take away the religious exemption, and they also tried to basically eliminate the medical exemption because you would have to follow the federal contraindication guidelines. Why is it so important to protect the right of doctors to be able to exercise personal judgment in giving a medical exemption to children rather than having to pro forma adhere to the federal contraindications that are, well, it's important because the federal government, the CDC, has restricted the medical exemption so that almost nothing qualifies as a medical reason to withhold vaccinations. So 99.9% of all children and adults under federal guidelines do not qualify for a medical exemption. If you take away the religious and the conscience exemptions and only allow the medical to stay in place, it's basically forced vaccination mm-hmm. of everyone in the country mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. all federally recommended vaccines. Mm-hmm. Or you are punished. Socially, you're punished. You know, you can't get an education. Right now, we're moving toward you won't get medical care. Already, pediatricians are throwing parents who refuse to get all the federally recommended vaccines for their children on schedule, not allowing them any flexibility. They're throwing them out of their practice.
Yes, I hear this.
We're now hearing the dentists are starting to talk about that if you don't have all the vaccines, they won't treat you, they won't, you know, care for you. We are finding that OBGYN, obstetricians, are also starting to take this hardline stance. We have had reports at MVIC that health insurance carriers are saying, if you don't get all the federally recommended vaccines, we won't insure you. I mean, there are a lot of punishments that are being attached to this federal schedule that hasn't been proven safe for children yet. So it's very important that everyone in Hawaii and every state get active, sign up for the MVIC advocacy portal, stay informed, and stand up for your rights. I mean, what you did in Hawaii this year was wonderful. You took a stand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. And I don't even know that many people know what happened. So why don't we talk about that? What's been happening here? Jeffrey.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to also back up what Barbara was saying. When parents bring their children to the doctor, I've heard the stories over and over relayed to me, the doctor does not give them true informed consent to tell them what they're up against, what the possible complications are, if any, and also what to look for. And a lot of the doctors don't even know themselves what a severe adverse vaccine injury looks like. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of people, we have a lot of parents that are falsely accused of perhaps shaken baby syndrome or things like that, because this is a severe adverse vaccine reaction. And this is very important for people to know. In 1985, Barbara released the book A Shot in the Dark, and the year after, in 86, President Reagan passed what was called the Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, and that what that did was it started what was called the I have my notes right here, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund. More importantly, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund gave total protection to the vaccine makers, so I, as a citizen, cannot sue them if they hurt my child. And since then, that was 1986, and here we are 2016, it's paid out over $3.5 billion in injuries to families. So when the line is being repeated over and over, safe and effective, and it's not, it is truly not safe. Now, I'm not saying none of it's safe. I'm saying the fact that they're saying it is safe is simply not true.
Barbara.
Yes. Well, I think. Yeah, he's actually the story of the compensation program under that law is even more sort of torturous, in that actually the law partially protected the companies from liability for federally recommended vaccines. It was in 2011. That the lobbyists got together, the medical trade associations, the pharmaceutical companies, and the federal agencies and public health officials, and there was a Supreme Court decision in 2011, Brisewitz versus Wyeth, and it was a DPT vaccine injury case. And what these parents were alleging is that the vaccine manufacturer, I can't remember, it was Wyeth, could have made the pertussis vaccine safer. They were able to sue because there was still liability if you could prove, give evidence that a vaccine could have been made safer. And what the Supreme Court did in 2011 in a split decision, with Sotomayor and Ginsburg writing a brilliant dissent, is the Supreme Court said there shall be no more lawsuits for any reason against a vaccine manufacturer if that vaccine has been licensed by the FDA as safe.
Wow.
In the same day, or the day before, I guess it was, the Supreme Court said that if a seatbelt is defective, the manufacturer can be sued. And yet the next day said there shall be no lawsuits for any reason, even if you could have made a vaccine safer. When, in 2011, when the Supreme Court did that, it became open season on the states in terms of trying to take away the exemptions. That's when it really began in earnest.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It culminated last year in this unbelievable assault after the measles in Disneyland debacle, which, you know, they still haven't found patient zero. Suddenly there was measles at Disneyland, you know, in a population of 320 million people, the total, I think, at the last I looked, it was about 166 cases nationwide in 2015 of measles. I mean, it was a joke.
That's not a lot.
No, it was a joke. But they use it as an excuse to go in and assault these states and try to take away these exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
When California lost, it sent a shockwave throughout this country of parents, because parents are becoming increasingly knowledgeable about this issue, and the CDC knows it. They've taken their own private polls. They know that the majority of people may still be vaccinating, but they are worried about it. So So that's why they went in. And now this year, parents saw what happened in California and realized that they aren't safe. And we've been able this year to, you know, in Hawaii, we held the line. We held the line in Virginia, which is my state. You know, it was a place that we were really, really concerned about. We've held the line in a number of states, Pennsylvania. I'll have to go and look at the update. I didn't get a chance to do that right before we came on the show, but I'll look at it now as we continue and give you a rundown of where this year we have been able to hold the line. But I'm very, very excited about it, because I think that what's happened is people are waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're realizing that we are not going to be able to protect our freedoms in this country unless we stop being apathetic and thinking that another person is going to do it. The truth is, we're all going to have to stand up for our freedom, or we're going to lose it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to talk a little bit more about, you know, in terms of vaccinations, why it's so important to be able to have exemptions and to have some freedom of choice?
Well, because as we were talking about, every vaccine carries a risk.
Right.
It's a pharmaceutical product. It carries
mm-hmm.
a risk, and that risk can be greater for some people than other people for genetic and environmental and biological reasons. The Institute of Medicine has confirmed that. In 2012 in a report, that doctors can't tell ahead of time who's going to be injured because that research has not been done. So whereas we have some information from some medical literature, in the medical literature, that there is, for example, genetic predisposition to having a reaction to a vaccination. A very simple one was DPT. Way back, several decades ago, the CDC said that there was a 3 times greater risk of a child having a convulsion after a DPT shot if there was a family history of convulsions in the family. And there was a 9 times greater risk if the child had had a previous convulsion prior to having a DPT shot. Now, how many people knew that back then? You know, I mean,
right.
They just weren't giving parents all the information about DPT vaccine back then, and they're
mm-hmm.
still not giving parents all the information, including admitting what they don't know,
right.
How much they don't know. And influenza vaccine is a perfect example. A lot of people don't know that the CDC has admitted now that influenza vaccines, on average, are, you know, less than 50% effective.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
right.
In the last decade, 1 year, it was judged to be 10% effective, which is
mm-hmm.
basically not effective at all.
Right.
So, I mean, this is just not information that people have when they're being pressed to get a flu shot, because it takes a lot of work to go in and look at the medical literature or to keep monitoring the CDC websites. And what we try to do at MBIC is we try to do that work for people
mm-hmm.
so they can
That's
come on
great.
Our website and they can see, you know, the information without having to do the research themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So it's nvic.org, right?
Right.
And once you're on that website, where do you go?
Well, we have it's a huge website because
yes.
we're one of the oldest websites on the internet that talks about diseases and vaccines. Our website went up in the early 90s along with the CDC's website.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge website, and there's a section called Diseases and Vaccines. We have all the product manufacturer inserts for all the vaccines. On influenza vaccine, there's like 16 different vaccine manufacturers, 16 different types of influenza vaccines, not manufacturers, but 16 different types of influenza vaccines. And so you can go on and read the manufacturer insert, which I encourage people to do if they
yes.
can
mm-hmm.
wade through them, because
mm-hmm.
all the ingredients are listed, for one thing, and also mm-hmm. the clinical trials that were done prior to licensure to prove that, well, supposedly prove the vaccine is safe and effective. You can look at the quality of that research. But what we have... information on informed consent.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Barbara. It also gives you what the adverse effects are that have been documented.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which information on the laws in your mm-hmm. state, information on the compensation program. I mean, it's huge. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of take your time and look at the different categories and do your own research on the website. There's a translator for people who speak other languages. It's a Google Translator. So you go on there and type in some search words and start to look around.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for creating that and keeping it alive. It's really wonderful.
And it is a little past 12:30, and you are listening to Health Talk, the first and third Mondays of the month, with your host, Dr. Donna Kaplan. And today our guests are Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Information Center and Jeffrey Jackson. We never did talk about, Jeffrey, about what your involvement is. So, I mean, could you give us some information? And then we
did.
Yeah. Well, I'm an independent medical journalist and health journalist, and I kind of try to sniff out the gaps that maybe the medical association and the doctors don't get from their published literature and from their pharmaceutical based propaganda. Sometimes they miss some of the nuts and bolts of what's really important. So I try to track that down and give it to parents in hopes that they would give it to their doctor and the doctor would act. But I can say that as an independent journalist, my only public endorsement I'll give and have ever given is NVIC. I go there as far as the advocacy, the portal. I'm a member of the advocacy portal, and I get the action alerts there, and that helps me write a lot of my articles. So I thank Barbara for that. But I do urge everyone to go there. The amount of time and work it'll save a parent individually is really priceless.
Thank you.
Well, please tell me your experience this year, because we were caught, like so many, you know, we don't get any heads up. And we saw it moving in Hawaii, and we were fighting Virginia. We were trying to organize and fight in Virginia, and we saw Hawaii coming, and we scrambled. And what was your experience about what happened this year in holding the line on those bills?
Yeah, well, first of all, there were seven of them, right?
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there was four bills, but three of them had companions. And my experience was Hawaii. They defeated them very quickly. Very quickly, the turnaround was nothing like I've seen before. So there was a mobilization here that was really great to see. It was a full court press too. So the bills that came through were essentially an elimination of the religious beliefs for children in school, and then also in much like California, they were attempting to fully vaccinate with the entire federal schedule all school children and homeschool mm-hmm. children. They also were passing an HPV mandatory vaccinations for school kids, boys and girls, and the final one was the, like you mentioned earlier, it required the full schedule for adults and children in 90 days. So it was, as far as what I saw as a journalist, it was a full court press. It came up fast, and it was met with like you said, holding the line. It was met with good conscious resistance, and it was good to see.
So what's happening now? Can you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. So right now, a lot of the bills are essentially deferred, which means killed. But that we won't know until March 10th, and by March 10th is the deadline they have for these bills. Sometimes these bills will resurrect when look like they've been killed, they become zombies and they come back to life, and then people have mm-hmm. to defeat them again. So, for the most part, there's only two active bills. The first bill is, and anybody can follow along with this if you go to capital.hawaii.gov, and you can type in these bills and follow them. Or you can go to NVIC. So right now there's SRC 30 and SR 12, And both of these are requesting the Departments of Health and Education to basically give information material to parents and kids on the HPV vaccine shot. Now, what this does is this was introduced after the HPV vaccine bill was essentially killed. So what this is doing is it's laying the groundwork for that bill to come back around again next year for mandatory HPV vaccinations. And so this is very important to get your voice out there. This is not a safe shot. The HPV shot has not been proven safe. In fact, as a journalist, I'm playing whack-a-mole trying to cover every country that this shot has been introduced in. The backlash of parents and severe adverse vaccine injuries is a tidal wave. I can count on my both toes, Colombia, Ireland, Denmark, Brazil. It just keeps going. Japan. If anybody searches that, the HPV vaccine shot is, you definitely want to do your research as a parent. I'll say that.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that. But so for now, they're trying to make a push for education about the vaccination. So obviously that's not going to be about, you know, the adverse effects. Right.
Correct. This is a one-sided educational push. That's very it's very clear. It's always how it typically plays out. It's very one-sided, and it's essentially written from my research. The education is written by the vaccine maker. So it's a marketing brochure for your child from the vaccine maker.
And so let's talk about the other bill that's still in effect, and we'll come back to that and talk a little bit more about HPV.
Okay. And the other bill that's still in effect is SB 2394, and its companion is HB 1945. Now they're saying the same thing, the bill, and it requires annual influenza vaccination for all healthcare workers. Now that's whether you are working with patients or not. So that is important to understand.
Even if you have an administrative job.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, the Senate vote for that is March 8th, which is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And you can, citizens of Hawaii can submit online testimony. I encourage anyone to show up at the state capitol to give testimony. And the important part is, the emails I received were there was nurses that showed up, but the doctors weren't showing up. And I'm putting this out on the air right now. Any doctors, ER doctors, these are the people that deal with the adverse reactions from the flu. These are when the parents come in, they typically, if there's a severe adverse reaction, it's the ER doctors that see that. So if ER doctors out there are listening and you can take some time off, please go and submit testimony, because I've talked to many that see these things happen in their ER or in their doctor's offices. So it's very important. It's very important to get that on record at the testimony.
And this is very timely. So it's coming up for a vote tomorrow in the Hawaii Senate, right?
Yes.
So, let's talk about that, because certainly hospitals have been requiring healthcare places have been requiring flu vaccinations. Barbara, do you want to talk about your experience with this?
Well, I think, first of all, everyone needs to know that right now in the compensation program that Jeffrey was talking about, the $3 billion that has been paid out, the two leading vaccines that have caused the most injuries are influenza vaccine and pertussis vaccine. Influenza vaccine now is the most of the awards now are not, they're fighting all the children's awards for children, but adults are being compensated for the influenza vaccine reactions, particularly Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a inflammation of the nerves and causes paralysis. It can be temporary or permanent. But I think what's really important, aside from the safety issue of influenza vaccine, is how ineffective it is. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the literature on healthcare worker vaccination, in 2013, the Cochrane Collaboration looked at clinical trials. They did it, published a review, and they were looking at healthcare workers getting vaccinated with flu vaccine in long-term healthcare facilities that had people in it who were over 60 years old or over, and they literally found absolutely no effect. There was on lab confirmed influenza, it had no effect on reducing cases or complications, including hospitalizations and deaths on those residents. A 2014 study that the CDC conducted, again, looked at a number of trials, clinical trials and case studies, and found that there was a very moderate correlation with reduced mortality and a very low correlation with prevention of influenza. And part of the reason that, you know, they now have admitted that, you know, the vaccine, influenza vaccines have tested 10 to 50% effective in most years in the last decade is that the flu virus mutates very rapidly.
Right.
And often they can't predict which strains are going to be circulating. So they often
guess wrong. They can't. It's a guess.
Right. It's a guess. But even when they guess right, still there is a low effectiveness because, you know, they do not understand. They admit in the medical literature over and over again that they do not understand how the influenza, how you get natural immunity, how you, what the correlates for vaccine immunity are. They don't understand the different is genetic variation. All of us are different genetically. We all have different exposures. And they simply have not gotten their hands or arms around this. So they're really, it is kind of a shot in the dark, really, because they don't understand how the they don't understand how to make a vaccine that will actually produce the kind of immunity that you get after you get a natural influenza infection and recover from it. In fact, there's evidence now that's been published in the literature that in the 2009 influenza H1N1 pandemic, that people who had had previous seasonal flu vaccines were more likely to get a severe case of pandemic H1N1 influenza. So, you know, there
so
is so much
immunity.
That's unknown. And what they kind of give the impression of is that they do know and that the vaccine is effective. The truth is you can have a subclinical infection of influenza, not even have any symptoms, be vaccinated or unvaccinated, shed the virus, and transmit it.
Absolutely.
So what are we doing when we say that every healthcare worker has got to get a flu shot in order to work in a healthcare facility?
Right.
That person can get vaccinated, still get infected, not show any symptoms, and transmit. What, I mean, it's a complete illusion that you're protected if you're vaccinated.
Right. I know. Herd immunity is an illusion.
We have someone on the air who has some important information she'd like to share.
Okay, so. Great. And while you're getting her on the air, I just want to say that I do want to talk about the flu shot and pregnancy, because they're recommending that all pregnant women get the flu shot. And here is a vaccination that hasn't been studied and in pregnant women. So why don't we take that caller and we can talk about that after.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Aloha. Thank you so
much.
Hi. My name is Dr. Kim Hain, and I'm a chiropractor. I used to be just a very concerned mommy nowadays. And I've been at all of these hearings, and I've actually testified. And I'd like to say thank you so much, Barbara Lowe, for sure, for everything that you do. You're amazing. And I've worked real closely with Dawn.
Oh, great.
Yeah, she's been super helpful. And Jeffrey, thank you. I love what you're saying. Thank you for our communication, and I hope to meet you someday in person.
Thanks.
One topic, I'm going to let you get back to that important stuff about our urgent matters of the flu and then the rezos going through on the HPV. But I really want to make sure that we mention to the public that the HB 1722 bill that was trying to take away our religious exemption, we did nothing to fight that one. It was a triple referral bill that never made it out, never got heard. And so it's, I guess, in all essence, dead until possibly next year. And I just have a fear that they're going to bring it back, and I want to make sure that everyone listening doesn't just rest on their laurels. We need more people down there. We need more bodies. This stuff happened with very few of us. I think, you know, when we did defeat the SB 2393, we maybe had 20 people. That was it.
And, Which one was that?
Only 10 people, I think, testified, if that. Mm-hmm. So just a shout-out that we need help. We appreciate everyone that is writing in and calling. I know everyone works and stuff, but bodies and in-person meetings with senators just seem to have, you know, a lot greater effect. And I just don't want us to rest, because I'm afraid that religious exemption one could come back.
Well, those are important points. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. Aloha.
Okay, so more on the flu and the flu shot, and what else do either of you?
Yeah, I'd like to jump in here. What the caller was saying, any bill in Hawaii, especially this, I wrote an article on this that takes away religious rights to indigenous peoples, violates the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and also violates the UN's Declaration of the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples. Both are recognized by the current standing president in the United States and have been said so recently in the past year. So this is actually, in my opinion, and I am not a native Hawaiian, I'll say that right now, but looking at the information that's out there, for a government to even float this bill is an insult, in my opinion, to take away the religious rights of the children and also their rights possibly to an education. So I want to add that, and then I'll stop there for a second.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Very important. Barbara?
No, I agree. I know when I testified in California last June, I said that when you take away, in that case it was the personal belief exemption, which is both religious and conscience, when you take away that exemption, you are forcing parents to violate a human right, that is the human right to informed consent to medical risk taking, in order for their child to have the civil right to have a school education. I mean, on so many levels this is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with, we've seen it again and again. You may be able to stop a bill in one legislative session, especially if it's like referred to a committee. The bill to remove religious exemption was referred to a committee, a study committee in Virginia. We were able to hold a line on healthcare workers being vaccinated for pertussis in Indiana, but it's been referred to a study committee. I do think these bills are going to come back. These lobbyists are not going to rest until they have taken away all non-medical exemptions in every state, so that only this very restrictive medical exemption remains. Now, we're very lucky right now that state laws govern vaccine laws, that because in the Constitution, anything that wasn't defined as a federal activity defaulted to the states. Vaccination was one of those things. Public health laws are by and large state laws, except for when it has to do with protection of the borders. That's why to get into this country, to become a citizen of this country, you have to have all the federally recommended vaccines. But the states right now control the citizen, what vaccines are given to the citizens of the states. That's why you see different laws in different states and different exemptions in different states. This means we have local control. And I completely agree with the caller that if people don't get up out of their houses, and away from their computers, and actually take the time to go and testify or show up or at least pick up the phone, mm-hmm. or send an email, which they can do through the advocacy portal. When you become a user of the advocacy portal, MVIC advocacy portal, you click a button and you are put in touch directly with electronic touch with your own legislator.
That's fantastic. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
don't think that other people are going to do it. You have to have the numbers. That's the only thing that these legislators understand, because they have to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
We may not have the money that the lobbyists have, but we have the people that go to the polls and vote. So you do have power,
mm-hmm.
if you exercise it.
Yes, and it's you know, here on the island of Kauai and the other islands, it's not so easy for folks to get on an airplane and fly to Honolulu to testify. But, you know, but it's, you know, certainly one can do that, especially if they have notice. But in terms of, like, tomorrow, okay, we have to get the word out to the Senate because this bill is going to, this is the health mandatory flu shot for healthcare workers is being voted on tomorrow in the Senate. But like you said, Barbara, we can go to the portal on your website and get in touch with the senators.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another listener who would like to go on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mahalo.
Aloha.
I am very, very grateful for all of you bringing this forth. And this issue was brought to my attention two full decades ago in 1996 when a dear friend in Colorado shared with me that her now mentally and physically handicapped child was due to a violent reaction to the DPT vaccine. And once she said that, I became very interested in this, and for the last 20 years have been an advocate for not just what NVIC does, but to go deeper to the more what you all are touching on a little bit, but I would like to bring to the fore about what is the more sinister and the more deliberate avarice that is behind this. And what I'm hearing time and time again is that these are lobbyists, and these are lobbyists for pharmaceutical mostly, and also for the higher ups within the AMA, the American Medical Association. And we have to really not just bring our bodies to the Senate and the House and network and educate others. We have to hold these corporations accountable because they are literally killing people, and they are permanently handicapping people for money and for profit. Just like the pharmaceuticals withheld generic anti-HIV medication in Africa and let thousands of people die because they couldn't make a profit on it. And that this is something that is egregious, and it is not just, like you were commenting on, not just illegal. It is actually a form of a war crime and a form of genocide, especially for indigenous people, especially here in Hawaii. And we need to not just hold our politicians accountable. We need to stop this lobbyist, and we need to hold these corporations accountable and get to the root of what's going on here. It's avarice and it's greed, and it needs to stop.
Well, thank you for your opinion. Yes, Barbara.
I couldn't agree more. Involved back in the 80s in the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. Our organization secured the vaccine safety, recording, reporting, and forming provisions in that law, which have basically been blown off and not enforced. But we were a very young, small group back then. There was no internet. There were no fax machines. There was no personal computers. You know, it was a very different time. But I, this last summer down in Atlanta, called for a repeal of the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act and a return to civil liability, because I think that it was a failed experiment in tort reform. Tort reform was a big deal back then. These companies, like the tobacco companies and any other company in this country or in the world that produces a product that can injure or kill, must be held accountable in a civil court of law. There should be no more protection of these companies. If there had been protection of the cigarette companies, we would never understand today what cigarettes can do. And they would still be advertising. People would still be smoking in great numbers because there would have never been any discoveries through these lawsuits. So, you know, I think it's time to reinstate liability for not only the companies, but for anyone who administers the vaccines, because when you have no liability and you participate in a medical procedure that can cause the injury or death of a person, you need to understand what the risk is that person is taking and your participation in it. And I, unfortunately, you know, we have this law that, that does protect everyone except for the person who's getting the vaccine.
Right.
So I think that I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I know that MVIC has taken a stand that we want a return to civil liability.
And we have come to the end of our show. We have about 30 seconds left. So could we give out phone numbers and emails, please, before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I'll take my time to say everyone go to NVIC.org and check out that website and sign up to be an advocate there. Mm-hmm. And the last 10 seconds, I can also agree with Barbara and say, as a journalist, when you dig under the surface with the vaccines, I believe we're looking at one of the biggest untold, unreported stories of the century.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, we just had, a year ago, a whistleblower from Merck Company, and very controversial, right?
Well, thank you for joining us.
And yes, Barbara.
Barbara,
thank
and
you
Jeffrey
so
much.
And Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it.
We still have more to talk about. There's a lot more we can talk about. So I hope you can both come back sometime soon. And we
certainly
can. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you so much.
And thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Cousin Rich. And thank you for the listeners and the callers.
Right on. And up next, my good friend Richard with One World Radio. And everyone have a real good day, okay?
Ahui ho.
Okay, aloha.
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 Bye, Barbara. Bye, Jeffrey. Bye, Donna.
Bye.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young. In morning Morgantown, morning Morgantown, buy your dreams a dollar down. Morning any town you name, morning's just the same. We'll find a table in the shade and sip party and lemonade and watch the morning on parade in morning Morgantown. Ladies in their rainbow fashions, colored stop and go lights flashing, will wink at total strangers passing in morning Morgantown. Smile to win you with our all morning still to live in morning.